Before long, we'll be where it would have taken mankind millions of years of learning to reach.
And what will Mitchell learn on getting there? Will he know what to do with his power?
That's the big agenda here, is undermining the whole idea of journalism, and that's the real thing to worry about.
The good old Ministry of Truth has another outlet.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence instead of respecting it, improving it, challenging it. But not here. Where knowledge is power, this is Powerful Radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth. Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Szczepańczyk. On today's show, we'll speak with Chicago activist Ra Chaka of the group Citizens Against Torture about a report the group released pertaining to longstanding torture practices of the Chicago Police Department. But now, here's the weekly review of news about media and democracy entitled Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
President Barack Obama reaffirmed his strong commitment to maintaining an open and neutral internet during a crowdsourced interview conducted on YouTube. It was the first interview given by the president since his State of the Union speech. As a follow-up to the speech, YouTube collected questions and votes for 5 days. More than 55,000 submitted and voted on both video and text questions. 11,696 questions were submitted. Obama answered a question about network neutrality from James Earlywine of Indianapolis. Earlywine's question received more than 1,300 votes, placing it at the top of the list in the jobs and economy category. The question was read by YouTube's Steve Grove.
I got to tell you, the number one question that came in the jobs and economy category had to do with the internet. And it came from James Earlywine, Indianapolis. He said, an open internet is a powerful engine for economic growth and new jobs. Letting large companies block and filter online content and services would stifle needed growth. What is your commitment to keeping the internet open and neutral in America?
Well, I'm a big believer in net neutrality. I campaigned on this. I continue to be a strong supporter of it. My FCC chairman, Julius Genachowski, has indicated that he shares the view that we've got to keep the internet open, that we don't want to create a bunch of gateways that prevent somebody who doesn't have a lot of money but has a good idea from being able to start their next YouTube or their next Google on the internet. So this is something we're committed to. We're getting pushback, obviously, from some of the bigger carriers who would like to be able to charge more fees and extract more money from wealthier customers. But we think that runs counter to the whole spirit of openness that has made the internet such a powerful engine for not only economic growth, but also for the generation of ideas and creativity.
Howard Zinn, historian, author, playwright, and educator, died last week at the age of 87. Zinn is best known for writing A People's History of the United States, in which he celebrated the historical contributions of workers, women, and people of color. In 2002, Howard Zinn made this recording for Seattle's Reclaim the Media.
This is Howard Zinn, and I'd like to tell you something about media and democracy. George Orwell wrote the lines, "Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past." He understood that if you can control what people know about history, if you can decide what gets in and what is left out, you can order their thinking. You can order their values. You can, in effect, organize their brains by controlling their knowledge. The people who dominate today's big media networks, who publish school textbooks, who decide upon the dominant ideas in our culture, are mostly rich white men. Not surprisingly, they ask that history concentrate on those who are rich and white and male. That is why the point of view of black people has not been a very important one in the telling of our history. Same with women's perspectives or those of working people. Most of what we get from mainstream media and from standard history books is ideological, biased not in favor of the people, but towards the commercial and political interests of the men and corporations at the top. When the New York Times interprets events in a certain way, whether by describing a nonviolent demonstration as a riot or by failing to critique government foreign policy claims, that interpretation becomes history. It becomes the record people will turn to in the future to find out about the past. That's why media voices from outside the mainstream have been so important throughout American history, even if they are left out of history's official version. There have been periods in American history when pamphlets and newspapers have had an important effect in arousing and organizing a movement. Back during the anti-slavery movement, abolitionists spread literature all over the country, so much so that President Andrew Jackson ordered the Postmaster General to bar abolitionist literature from the southern states. Earlier in this century, there were thriving labor newspapers providing a counterpoint to the business-run press. Today, community radio stations and alternative publications are still found all over the country. Satellite TV and the Internet make it easier to distribute alternative media to audiences in distant homes and libraries. These community-based media resources are increasingly important as critical voices are silenced or pushed to the margins by the mainstream. By letting these voices speak, the alternative media preserve crucial parts of today's history and challenge powerful institutions' right to control the future.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
You're listening to The Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepanchik. We now feature an interview with Chicago activist Ra Chaka of the group Citizens Against Torture about a report the group released pertaining to longstanding torture practices of the Chicago Police Department. The following interview with Ra Chaka was recorded on Wednesday, February 3rd, 2010. We are joined on the phone by Ra Chaka. Ra Chaka is a Chicago citizen and activist involved with a group called Citizens Against Torture, which we're going to talk about a report that they recently released. And by way of disclosure, I should mention that Ra Chaka and I are co-organizers with the Illinois Coalition for Justice, Peace, and the Environment. But that said, Ra Chaka, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So Citizens Against Torture, it's a group you're involved with. Can you briefly give an introduction as to what the group is for listeners who may be unfamiliar with the group?
We're simply citizens who believe that it is important that citizens speak out in regard to torture, in regard to citizens. Some of the members of the group, First Dennis Camilla, Vicky Gaines, who was a torture victim, and Linda Flores, also son, who is in prison now. What we intend to do is to get the U.S. Attorney General and those who are working with them to expand their investigation in regard to torture by Chicago police officers. Because at the moment, Patrick Fitzgerald, who is investigating and allegedly has got Joan Burge, who is the commander in Chicago Police Department, indicted for minor crimes in regard to the torture. He's the only one who's been indicted so far. We know that there were dozens of police officers who were involved from different districts in the Chicago Police Department. We believe that simply trying and convicting Joan Burge for minor charges is not going to be sufficient to clean up the damage that has been done to other citizens in the city of Chicago. We believe that hundreds, maybe thousands of people who are incarcerated and who have been incarcerated were victims of this torture. We believe that a conspiracy was engaged in by many people, not only police officers, but also former state attorneys, personality, their judges. We believe that they were involved in it. We believe that defense attorneys were involved in it. We believe that there were a number of people in Chicago who now sit in high places, including the appellate court, the circuit court, the Illinois Supreme Court, were involved in this cover-up of torture in Chicago. And so therefore, we're saying that the citizens have been denied justice according to our Constitution and the U.S. Constitution, and we believe that we have to speak out in regard to it.
I'm holding in my hands a copy of a report that Citizens Against Torture had released. And this is pretty expansive. It covers maybe 120 pages. It's got a spreadsheet of arrest victims, torture methods, the police officers in the Chicago Police Department who were involved, the area of the city that was involved, the felony review or prosecutor, and the judge and sentence that was involved. Not to mention assorted articles, appendices, a petition with a lot of signatories to it, as well as an introductory statement that I'll just read briefly now, and I'd like you to expand on, if I can find it.
We know that there are a lot of people who had been victims of torture. We know that for a fact. It has been publicized extensively by different news media. The problem has been, it has been a conspiracy, and because it's been a conspiracy on all levels, it has been covered up. We understand that police officers, state attorneys, defense attorneys, judges, and special prosecutors have engaged in this conspiratorial action to cover this matter up. We believe that it is still going on to this very day. It is a culture in the Chicago Police Department to violate the civil, the constitutional, and the human rights of other citizens. It is ongoing to this day. Almost on a weekly basis, we witness people who are being shot down by the police. We know that there are certain groups of people from certain communities who have been victims of this conspiracy. And it hasn't stopped. We know that right now police officers believe that they have the authority not just to shoot three shots in the air, but to shoot three shots in the back when a person is running away from them. We believe that unless justice prevails, this is going to do nothing but escalate. It's not going to stop, because police believe, especially when Mayor Daley was the state attorney and Dick Devine was his assistant, that they co-signed and they allowed these type of atrocities to reign in the city of Chicago. And so police officers got comfortable with this culture. We believe that unless we as citizens begin to speak out about it, nothing really is going to be done. We spoke out some years ago, and a judge appointed some special prosecutors, and those special prosecutors joined into the conspiracy. Now we have a U.S. prosecutor who's trying to sweep it under the rug. We're saying that you can't continue to do this. We have hundreds of people still in prison as a result of torture, confession being given by them, the courts, circuit court, appellate court, Illinois Supreme Court, have co-signed those confessions and allowed them to languish in prison. We're saying that these injustices have got to stop.
You've outlined in the report that I have here outlines a great deal of corruption, it seems like, at all levels. Why is it so corrupt?
It is easy to slide down that slippery slope when you have supervisors and people that's in charge of the government that is going to allow it to slide down that slope. And once it begins to slide, then it becomes cultural. It becomes systemic. It becomes a part of business operating as usual. And that's the bottom line of it. And when you begin to go down that path, There's really no stopping it. And hear somebody speak up and say, this got to be stopped. People's lives are involved here. On almost a weekly basis, after people that spent 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years in prison, we come to find out now that they were innocent of the crimes in which they were convicted of. Now, we know that when some people who knew from the beginning that they were innocent, they knew from the beginning. We had prosecutors who knew, we had police officers who knew, who testified and kept the lie. That's what they done. They testified to a lie and got people convicted. We know defense attorneys who knew that their clients were innocent, but yet they done favors with the prosecution in order to get some people convicted, in order to receive a favor down the road. We know judges who knew, absolutely knew, that that individual did not commit the crime, knew that that individual had been tortured, and refused to abide by the spirit and the letter of the law. We know this. There's records that contain this information. There's no secret about it. We know that there are newspaper people who have published ties to torture that was going on in different police departments. We know that. Everybody knows it. But yet, people swept it under the rug, and so therefore, you have hundreds, maybe thousands of people who have been in prison, some of them who've been released from prison, who were innocent of the crimes in which they were convicted of.
Some people may respond back in saying, well, you have celebrated instances like that of former Chicago Police Commander John Burge, under whom a fair amount of torture has taken place. And you may hear the response back, well, that was in the past, and that was a few bad apples. That by taking care of the, you know, what we see here is that of a small, relatively small number of individuals who have been acting disproportionate and are the exception to the rule. And once they're gotten rid of, then everything is just fine. How do you respond to when that few bad apples argument is posed to you?
They are a reflection of us as a society, as a people. Basically, that is really what it boils down to. They represent us. And to say that there's just a few bad apples flies in the face of what is justly due to people. They're not just a few bad apples. They represent a police department. That means that other people knew. That means that other police officers knew about what was going on, and they refused to abide by the oath of office. That's what it bows down to. They are representatives of the people of the state of Illinois. And if they know that crime is being committed, now, whoever, whether they're fellow police officers or whether they're just citizens, they got a duty and responsibility to do their right, to do their responsibility. That's their damn job. And it's our job as citizens to hold them accountable for what they're supposed to be doing. It's not just a few bad apples. It's all of us. That's the same thing that's going on if you talk about over in Guantanamo Bay and Abu Ghraib, where people are torturing other people. They say, oh, it's just a few bad apples, you know. Not all of the soldiers is doing that. But all of the soldiers know. They all know. And they're sworn to represent us as a people, as a just people. If we allow them to do that and get away with it, that's a reflection on all of us. All of Americans are torturers in the eyes of the world. And they hate us because of that. That's where it comes from. Because they believe that we are not a just people. And that the people that we sit over there to allegedly render justice, we're allowing them to render injustice. And so therefore, we're just as guilty as they are. So therefore, 9/11 is justified in the eyes of the world.
returning to the question about accountability, it seems like that given that current circumstances regarding the systemic issue of, like, even if you are able to find a lot of people who are implicated with torture and bring them up to trial, nonetheless, you find a lot of instances, and in fact, just this past week as we're recording, another police officer was acquitted because of alleged crimes, that, or acquitted from alleged crimes, that there's, it seems like that it's practically impossible to bring accountability. So I pose that question to you. Even in the face of such overwhelming evidence, how can accountability be brought?
Well, that's why we formed this group that we have formed, Citizens Against Torture, because we believe, and some of the members have experienced it firsthand, torture, statements, trial, conviction, imprisonment, they have experienced that. What we believe is that citizens, such as we are, will speak out against it. And at some point, justice will prevail. We believe that. We believe that we are a just society for the most part. And that ordinary citizen will say, no, not in my name. You don't do this in my name because you're representing me. We are tax-paying citizens. We pay your salary. You would not do this because it's in violation of all things of the godly. But not only that, it's in violation of our rules and standards of law. That's what we are saying. Other people are saying that this is what we do in order to make these cases, in order to put people in jail, in order to carry on this culture. We're saying that this is not what we want you to do. And we have to speak out against it. We can't allow it to go on. Because it won't do nothing but get worse. It might be my son today, it'll be your son tomorrow. That's the way it works. But people are saying, oh, it's just black youth, black young men and women that's happening to. No, it's not. We find in our study that there are a lot of Latino youth who've been victims of this. There's a lot of women who've been victims of this. The women have been raped by police officers, have been beat up by police officers, have been shot by police officers. We know that a lot of youth have been beat up and shot by police officers because they were running from them. They're afraid of the police. That is a culture. We know that there are Caucasians who have been beat up by police and been shot by police who did not do the crime, who've been forced to confess to crimes in which they did not commit, have been tried and convicted by a judicial system. And judges on the circuit court level, judges on the appellate court level, who knew that that was an injustice, co-signed it, went along with it. We're saying that we have to stop this. We must stop it. And that's what we've organized to do. We've organized to stop this madness because it will do nothing but escalate.
Citizens Against Torture has been working on this issue for quite a while, as evidenced by this impressively organized report.
We've been working on it.
Do you have any victories, any like acquittals or injustices reversed that Citizens Against Torture can take credit for?
Well, what we have done is that we have provided a number of lawyers and organizations with the information, and they have provided us with other information. And a lot of the organizations have been working on these cases for years. And like I say, on a weekly basis, somebody is being released from prison after spending 10, 15, 20, 30 years in prison. They're being released because they were innocent of the crime. What we're taking credit for is working with other organizations and lawyers in regard to proving the innocence of these individuals. And like I said already, there are dozens, hundreds of people still inside the prison. And unless we can get somebody to take the responsibility to look into their cases. And that's what we asked Patrick Fitzgerald to do. Don't limit the investigation. Look at all of the police departments. Look at all the cases. And we have listed a lot of cases. Look at all of the cases. Investigate. Question the police officers. Question the people. To find out whether these individuals still need to be languishing in the prison system. Because they're claiming that they were innocent and been tortured.
And the last question, for folks who would want to learn more and get involved, what would you suggest that they do? Who do you think that they should contact? Or if they want to get in touch with Citizens Against Torture, how can they contact you?
Well, we have a post office box. And we ask that people communicate with us through the post office box. Because what we're doing is very, very dangerous. The post office box is 21998 Chicago, Illinois, 60641. They can communicate with Bertha Escamilla, that's Escamilla, or Rod Chaka, or Dickie Edward Gaines, G-A-I-N-E-S, or Linda Flores at that address in regard to receive information from us. We're limited as far as the manuals are concerned. We're trying to get the manuals in all of the hands of all of the officials on the state level, the county, the city council, state representatives, state senators, the attorney general, the United States senators and Attorney General of the United States, U.S. State's Attorney, President of the United States. We try to get these manuals in their hands, and it's really costly for us. But what we're asking for, if anybody wants to send donations to us, they can send it to the post office box, 21998 Chicago, Illinois, 60621, to help us with it. Postage and stuff, and also maybe the printing of some of these manuals. And if anybody want a manual, just communicate to us in regard to that. And we got listed a lot of prisoners who have either been released or still in prison. And there's quite a few. And I know people who've been watching the news, they have seen that there's a lot of people on a weekly basis that are being released that have spent a lot of years in prison. And now they come to find out they were innocent. And that's really unbelievable. Because we know that there were people who knew long before now that they were innocent. And there were people who knew that police officers who were on the police department and now who are in private practice of law, who are judges, that knew that these things were going on and they did not report it. We know that for a fact.
We've been speaking with Ra Chaka. He is a Chicago citizen and activist involved with a group called Citizens Against Torture, which has released a report, an extensive report, on the state and history of police torture of citizens in Chicago. And he's been speaking with us about the report and related issues. Ra Chaka, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was an interview with Ra Chaka, recorded on February 3rd, 2010. Listen to all past episodes of the Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.